Cambridge English, First 1. Published by Cambridge University Press and Cambridge English Language Assessment, 2014. This recording is copyright. CD 1. This is the Cambridge English First, Test 1. I'm going to give you the instructions for this test. I shall introduce each part of the test and give you time to look at the questions. At the start of each piece, you'll hear this sound. You'll hear each piece twice. Remember, while you're listening, write your answers on the question paper. You'll have 5 minutes at the end of the test to copy your answers onto the separate answer sheet. There will now be a pause. Please ask any questions now because you must not speak during the test. Now open your question paper and look at part one. You will hear people talking in 8 different situations. For questions 1 to 8, choose the best answer A, B or C. Question 1. You hear a woman talking on her mobile phone about a missing piece of furniture.
I see. It wasn't in the van. But never mind, I'll call the removals company. It's okay, I'm sure it'll be fine. I just wonder what they've done with it. I mean, it isn't something you can easily lose, is it? You'd think someone would have noticed almost straight away. I'm sure it'll turn up very soon. So don't get too upset about it. It's just rather odd. And considering all the things that could have gone wrong, I think we've been fairly lucky, really, don't you? I see. It wasn't in the van. But never mind, I'll call the removals company. It's okay, I'm sure it'll be fine. I just wonder what they've done with it. I mean, it isn't something you can easily lose, is it? You'd think someone would have noticed almost straight away. I'm sure it'll turn up very soon. So don't get too upset about it. It's just rather odd. And considering all the things that could have gone wrong, I think we've been fairly lucky, really, don't you?
Question 2. You hear 2 students talking about their current course topic.
I think the lectures are really fascinating, don't you?
Only if you're interested in that period of history. You'd think the lecture would have moved on to the next period by now. It's much more interesting.
But we needed extra time on it because it's such a complex area.
Yeah, I can't make head nor tail of it.
We need to get to grips with it, though, or we won't be able to manage what's coming next.
But is it really useful anyway?
Oh, come on. Let's get a coffee. I think the lectures are really fascinating, don't you?
Only if you're interested in that period of history. You'd think the lecture would have moved on to the next period by now. It's much more interesting.
But we needed extra time on it because it's such a complex area.
Yeah, I can't make head nor tail of it.
We need to get to grips with it, though, or we won't be able to manage what's coming next.
But is it really useful anyway?
Oh, come on. Let's get a coffee.
Question 3. You hear 2 business people talking about a contract.
Have you heard that the contract's been cancelled?
No, I had no idea. You must be really annoyed after all the work you put into it.
Initially I was, yes. I spent 3 weeks putting it all together and the company were really positive about it. But then I found out that they're in some financial difficulty, so it's really unfortunate for them. Oh. We've worked with them for years.
It was a huge contract, wasn't it? What are you going to do now?
Well, we've just had a very big order from one of our trusted clients, so that's taken any pressure off. Have you heard that the contract's been cancelled?
No, I had no idea. You must be really annoyed after all the work you put into it.
Initially, I was, yes. I spent 3 weeks putting it all together and the company were really positive about it. But then I found out that they're in some financial difficulty, so it's really unfortunate for them.
Oh.
We've worked with them for years.
It was a huge contract, wasn't it? What are you going to do now?
Well, we've just had a very big order from one of our trusted clients, so that's taken any pressure off.
Question 4. You hear an artist telling a friend about an art prize he's just won.
You must be thrilled after the announcement that you've won such a famous art prize.
Well, to be honest, I'm not quite sure how I feel yet. I'd always wondered about the idea of an art prize. I mean, it's not exactly a competition, so it seems strange. And you never quite know what the judges are looking for when they pick a winner.
Really?
Well, yes, but actually, when I was on my own in the studio, I felt much more positive about it, and even started dreaming about how my career would change now, not to mention what I'll do with the money.
Well, good luck. You must be thrilled after the announcement that you've won such a famous art prize.
Well, to be honest, I'm not quite sure how I feel yet. I'd always wondered about the idea of an art prize. I mean, it's not exactly a competition, so it seems strange. And you never quite know what the judges are looking for when they pick a winner.
Really?
Well, yes, but actually, when I was on my own in the studio, I felt much more positive about it, and even started dreaming about how my career would change now, not to mention what I'll do with the money.
Well, good luck.
Question 5. You overhear a woman talking to a friend on her mobile phone.
I don't mind when you come over as long as it isn't too late. 6:30 would be fine and give us time to have a really good chat. Is that okay? I have to get up early on Thursday morning because I have to get the earlier flight. I'd booked myself on a 10 o'clock one, but that's been cancelled. There's another one in the afternoon, but I'd miss the meeting if I took that one. It's a bit of a nuisance, but there you go. Anyway, it'll be great to see you. I don't mind when you come over as long as it isn't too late. 6:30 would be fine and give us time to have a really good chat. Is that okay? I have to get up early on Thursday morning because I have to get the earlier flight. I'd booked myself on a 10 o'clock one, but that's been cancelled. There's another one in the afternoon, but I'd miss the meeting if I took that one. It's a bit of a nuisance, but there you go. Anyway, it'll be great to see you.
Question 6. You hear a guitarist talking about his profession.
People ask me how to set up a band, but that's a matter of luck. There's no simple answer. Find people who want it as badly as you do, who can also be your best friends. I want to say something about the difficulty of learning to be a musician. It takes thousands of hours of practice. You have to be blessed with talent. You have to have day jobs until you finally make it, but if you have a passion for something and you work hard enough, you'll get there. You'll soon find out which are the venues with the most enthusiastic fans. People ask me how to set up a band, but that's a matter of luck. There's no simple answer. Find people who want it as badly as you do, who can also be your best friends. I want to say something about the difficulty of learning to be a musician. It takes thousands of hours of practice. You have to be blessed with talent. You have to have day jobs until you finally make it, but if you have a passion for something and you work hard enough, you'll get there. You'll soon find out which are the venues with the most enthusiastic fans.
Question 7. You hear a woman talking to a sales assistant.
Hello, can I help you?
Yes, I bought these trainers from your company online and I really like them and everything, but they're a bit tight. I was wondering if you could give me a refund.
Sorry, I'm afraid we can't do that.
Why not? It's obvious I haven't worn them and I've still got the receipt. Is it because I bought them online? Aren't you legally required to give a refund?
No, it's not that. These trainers don't come from here. Look at the receipt. It's got the wrong name on. Try next door. Hello, can I help you?
Yes, I bought these trainers from your company online and I really like them and everything, but they're a bit tight. I was wondering if you could give me a refund.
Sorry, I'm afraid we can't do that.
Why not? It's obvious I haven't worn them and I've still got the receipt. Is it because I bought them online? Aren't you legally required to give a refund?
No, it's not that. These trainers don't come from here. Look at the receipt. It's got the wrong name on. Try next door.
Question 8. You hear a woman talking about a radio chat show.
I love listening to the Claire Nolan show on Friday at 8 o'clock. She has great guests and they often have a good time together on the show. Claire has a way of getting people to say things which come across as very funny. She doesn't come across as a celebrity, but more a normal person who is clever and tells us things we don't know in an enthusiastic and useful manner. She's good at doing that, at the same time as making her guests feel involved. So many presenters nowadays seem to use their shows just to show off their own talents, but not Claire Nolan. I love listening to the Claire Nolan show on Friday at 8 o'clock. She has great guests and they often have a good time together on the show. Claire has a way of getting people to say things which come across as very funny. She doesn't come across as a celebrity, but more a normal person who is clever and tells us things we don't know in an enthusiastic and useful manner. She's good at doing that, at the same time as making her guests feel involved. So many presenters nowadays seem to use their shows just to show off their own talents, but not Claire Nolan.
That is the end of part one. Now turn to part two. You will hear a photographer called Ian Gerard talking about his career. For questions 9 to 18, complete the sentences with a word or short phrase. You now have 45 seconds to look at part two.
Good evening, everyone. My name's Ian Gerard, and I'm a photographer. I'm here to tell you a bit about my career so far, and also about my new book. I often get asked if I studied photography at university, and people are sometimes surprised that I didn't. I wanted to, but my parents wouldn't let me, so I had to choose something else. I loved history, but my marks weren't very good, but I was keen on geography too. So that is what I did in the end. I actually think it's made me a better photographer and has given my work a broader context. On my degree course, in my final year, we studied all aspects of the development of cities and we had to do a presentation. We could do what we wanted and it was really interesting the topics people chose. I chose street markets for mine, but a friend did his on the growth of urban transport networks. On graduation, I went to the USA. I knew I wanted to work as a photographer, so I'd sent pictures to news organisations and advertising agencies, hoping I might get something in a brochure or even a newspaper. In fact, it was a magazine that noticed my pictures, and I worked for it for a year. I learnt a huge amount, but what I really wanted to do was see the USA for myself. I needed a theme, something really American, maybe photographing diners or shopping malls around the country. Then I remembered all those westerns I'd seen, and I just knew it had to be horses. I'd found what I wanted to focus on. It was an amazing 6 months. I started off in the baking heat of summer on the East Coast and finished my journey up in the mountains. I get the most striking shots in the winter light, although I do love the warmth in summer photos. Anyway, I came back to Britain at the beginning of spring and published my US photos in a small book. I earned just enough to finance my next trip round the UK. I felt it was time I explored my own country. I'd done a lot of driving in the USA, and I wanted a change from the car, so went by motorbike instead. I love train travel, but I wanted to get to more remote areas. I wanted to explore the relationship between people and place. Interestingly, in the last few decades, many photographers from the UK haven't done much on fishing communities here, so that's what I did. They've tended to focus on family life in inner-city communities instead. The resulting photos I'm putting together for my new book. One thing I've learnt is that it takes ages to produce a book, almost as long, in fact, as it took me to travel around Britain and then develop all the photos I'd taken. I started my journey in August and finished last month in November. My book won't be in the shops until March, though there's an exhibition of my pictures touring the UK from January. It's funny, I really wanted to call my book Visions, but apparently there's already one called that. So my publishers suggested the title In Focus, which I thought was horrible. In the end, we settled for Images, which is okay. Now I'm planning my next tour. I wasn't sure which theme to choose this time. I initially thought I'd look at lakes and mountains, but then I saw a tractor in a field and I knew I'd do farming. I've decided to use a special camera to create very large photos, which I'm hoping to exhibit next year. Well, if you have any questions about my new...
Now you'll hear part two again.
Good evening, everyone. My name's Ian Gerard, and I'm a photographer. I'm here to tell you a bit about my career so far, and also about my new book. I often get asked if I studied photography at university, and people are sometimes surprised that I didn't. I wanted to, but my parents wouldn't let me, so I had to choose something else. I loved history, but my marks weren't very good, but I was keen on geography too, so that is what I did in the end. I actually think it's made me a better photographer and has given my work a broader context. On my degree course, in my final year, we studied all aspects of the development of cities and we had to do a presentation. We could do what we wanted and it was really interesting the topics people chose. I chose street markets for mine, but a friend did his on the growth of urban transport networks. On graduation, I went to the USA. I knew I wanted to work as a photographer, so I'd sent pictures to news organisations and advertising agencies, hoping I might get something in a brochure or even a newspaper. In fact, it was a magazine that noticed my pictures, and I worked for it for a year. I learnt a huge amount, but what I really wanted to do was see the USA for myself. I needed a theme, something really American. Maybe photographing diners or shopping malls around the country. Then I remembered all those westerns I'd seen, and I just knew it had to be horses. I'd found what I wanted to focus on. It was an amazing 6 months. I started off in the baking heat of summer on the East Coast and finished my journey up in the mountains. I get the most striking shots in the winter light, although I do love the warmth in summer photos. Anyway, I came back to Britain at the beginning of spring and published my US photos in a small book. I earned just enough to finance my next trip round the UK. I felt it was time I explored my own country. I'd done a lot of driving in the USA and I wanted a change from the car, so went by motorbike instead. I love train travel, but I wanted to get to more remote areas. I wanted to explore the relationship between people and place.
Interestingly, in the last few decades, many photographers from the UK haven't done much on fishing communities here, so that's what I did. They've tended to focus on family life in inner-city communities instead. The resulting photos I'm putting together for my new book. One thing I've learnt is that it takes ages to produce a book, almost as long, in fact, as it took me to travel around Britain and then develop all the photos I'd taken. I started my journey in August and finished last month in November. My book won't be in the shops until March, though there's an exhibition of my pictures touring the UK from January. It's funny, I really wanted to call my book Visions, but apparently there's already one called that. So my publishers suggested the title In Focus, which I thought was horrible. In the end, we settled for Images, which is okay. Now I'm planning my next tour. I wasn't sure which theme to choose this time. I initially thought I'd look at lakes and mountains, but then I saw a tractor in a field and I knew I'd do farming. I've decided to use a special camera to create very large photos, which I'm hoping to exhibit next year. Well, if you have any questions about my new...
That is the end of part two. Now turn to part three. You will hear five short extracts in which people are talking about the benefits of learning another language. For questions 19 to 23, choose which benefit, A to H, each speaker has experienced. Use the letters only once. There are three extra letters which you do not need to use. You now have 30 seconds to look at part three. Speaker 1.
I know people from all around the world because my job involves looking for global solutions to environmental problems. I get to go abroad a lot, and I do think speaking or reading the language of a country has been a huge help when I visited. Of course, I've friends who've been all over without speaking another language, and they've been able to make themselves understood, but I've usually found that when I'm somewhere I can speak the language, I worry less about the practical aspects of a journey and focus on enjoying what's going on around me. And that's what it's all about, really.
Speaker 2.
Basically, it's pretty obvious. The better you can speak a language, or the more languages you know, the greater the number of people you can communicate with. In my case, I've formed close ties with a number of people from other countries. That's usually because we all appreciate the time and effort we've spent getting to know a different language and culture. I'm lucky because languages were well taught at my school. I wasn't actually considered to be particularly clever, but I was given a good start as far as other languages are concerned. I'm very grateful for that.
Speaker 3.
People often think I must be super intelligent to be doing the course I'm doing, but I don't think that's the case. I'm hoping to have a career in global finance, and the big advantage when I was applying for this college was the fact that I could speak several languages. That really helped me get in, and I've met people from all over the world here. When I was a child, my parents travelled around a great deal. Luckily, I was a sociable child, so in every new country we lived in, I learnt the language quite quickly.
Speaker 4.
If you've ever travelled to a country where people speak a different language from your own, then you'll know that you can't just learn a list of words if you want to make yourself understood. The same idea is often expressed differently in other languages, so it's actually taught me a lot about my mother tongue. When you speak a foreign language, you have to actively think about what you want to say and how you want to say it. I find it helps if I think about the grammar in my native language first, something I'd never really thought about before. I certainly didn't when I was at school.
Speaker 5.
It's other people who have helped me learn languages by letting me struggle on in their native tongue even when they knew mine far better. So I have a lot of kind and patient people to thank. I could never concentrate in language classes at school, but then I realised how important languages are these days. After all, in our globalised world, knowing more than your own language is extremely useful. I wouldn't already be at the level I am now professionally in my career if I didn't speak a few languages reasonably well. It's good to know all the travelling I did after leaving school wasn't wasted.
Now you'll hear part 3 again. Speaker 1.
I know people from all around the world because my job involves looking for global solutions to environmental problems. I get to go abroad a lot, and I do think speaking or reading the language of a country has been a huge help when I visited. Of course, I've friends who've been all over without speaking another language, and they've been able to make themselves understood, but I've usually found that when I'm somewhere I can speak the language, I worry less about the practical aspects of a journey and focus on enjoying what's going on around me. And that's what it's all about, really.
Speaker 2.
Basically, it's pretty obvious. The better you can speak a language, or the more languages you know, the greater the number of people you can communicate with. In my case, I've formed close ties with a number of people from other countries. That's usually because we all appreciate the time and effort we've spent getting to know a different language and culture. I'm lucky because languages were well taught at my school. I wasn't actually considered to be particularly clever, but I was given a good start as far as other languages are concerned. I'm very grateful for that.
Speaker 3.
People often think I must be super intelligent to be doing the course I'm doing, but I don't think that's the case. I'm hoping to have a career in global finance, and the big advantage when I was applying for this college was the fact that I could speak several languages. That really helped me get in, and I've met people from all over the world here. When I was a child, my parents travelled around a great deal. Luckily, I was a sociable child, so in every new country we lived in, I learnt the language quite quickly.
Speaker 4.
If you've ever travelled to a country where people speak a different language from your own, then you'll know that you can't just learn a list of words if you want to make yourself understood. The same idea is often expressed differently in other languages, so it's actually taught me a lot about my mother tongue. When you speak a foreign language, you have to actively think about what you want to say and how you want to say it. I find it helps if I think about the grammar in my native language first, something I'd never really thought about before. I certainly didn't when I was at school.
Speaker 5.
It's other people who have helped me learn languages by letting me struggle on in their native tongue even when they knew mine far better. So I have a lot of kind and patient people to thank. I could never concentrate in language classes at school, but then I realised how important languages are these days. After all, in our globalised world, knowing more than your own language is extremely useful. I wouldn't already be at the level I am now professionally in my career if I didn't speak a few languages reasonably well. It's good to know all the travelling I did after leaving school wasn't wasted.
That's the end of part 3. You will hear an interview with a woman called Patricia Jones, who is a naturalist. For questions 24 to 30, choose the best answer, A, B or C. You now have 1 minute to look at part 4.
Patricia, this year marks the 20th anniversary of the start of your elephant project in Africa. What are your feelings?
Well, it's extraordinary to me to think that 20 years have passed, that I'm still working on the same projects, and that hundreds of students who have volunteered with us have now got university teaching positions all over the world.
Mm.
That's probably had an impact on thousands of people by now, not just the foreign visitors coming to Africa, but locals as well.
Mm. How do you spend your time nowadays?
Well, to begin with, my work was just concerned with learning about the behaviour of elephants in Africa. But then I realised that survival of the species depends on the actions of governments, big multinationals, and ordinary people.
Mm.
So now I tend to focus more on getting people to realise the effect their actions have on wildlife and natural habitats.
Mm.
I try to demonstrate that by making a small change in the choices they make, for example in the products they buy, people can have a big effect on the wider world.
Do you think zoos have a part to play in conservation?
Well, there are some old-fashioned zoos where the animals are kept in small cages for the entertainment of the public. The animals aren't able to express their natural behaviour, and those zoos should definitely be shut down immediately.
Mm.
The best thing is for an animal to live in its natural environment. But we have this idealised view of freedom, where their lives will be wonderful. The reality is that in so many places, there are hunters.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we have to step in and offer a species protection, and that's where the new type of zoos come in.
Mm. In your new book, entitled Animals and Their Habitats, what message are you hoping to convey?
The natural world is in real crisis, but there are extraordinary people all around the planet who are absolutely determined that endangered animal species or plants or ecosystems should be helped to restore themselves. I hope it'll be inspiring for young biologists and botanists at the outset of their careers to read about these people who have taken on these huge challenges.
Have children, do you think, lost that sense of connection to the natural world?
Yes. We should be encouraging them to get back in touch with nature, either by taking them into a natural environment or by bringing nature to the child.
Mm.
You know, research has shown that contact with the natural world is actually crucial for psychological growth.
Wow.
So many children have such little opportunity to experience nature and only do so second-hand from a TV screen.
Mm. What does your organisation called In Touch aim to do?
Well, it's all youth-driven. So it's young people discussing the problems they see around them and then between them choosing three projects to work on that they feel would make things better.
Oh.
One project is about people, one is about animals, and one is about the environment. So in any group of young people, you get those passionate about animals, you get some who want to do community service for people, and you have some who want to help the local environment.
Do you think you still have a role to play?
Judging from the number of girls who write and say they want to follow in my footsteps, I think I do. But what I'd really like to do is stop people blaming science for everything. Many people think that it's scientists who are damaging the environment. I want people to see that they themselves are responsible too, and that they can also be part of the solution by being conscious about the choices they make in their everyday lives. That's what I want to achieve.
Mm. Many thanks, Patricia.
Now you'll hear part four again.
Patricia, this year marks the 20th anniversary of the start of your elephant project in Africa. What are your feelings?
Well, it's extraordinary to me to think that 20 years have passed, that I'm still working on the same projects, and that hundreds of students who have volunteered with us have now got university teaching positions all over the world.
Mm.
That's probably had an impact on thousands of people by now, not just the foreign visitors coming to Africa, but locals as well.
Mm. How do you spend your time nowadays?
Well, to begin with, my work was just concerned with learning about the behaviour of elephants in Africa. But then I realised that survival of the species depends on the actions of governments, big multinationals, and ordinary people.
Mm.
So now I tend to focus more on getting people to realise the effect their actions have on wildlife and natural habitats.
Mm.
I try to demonstrate that by making a small change in the choices they make, for example in the products they buy, people can have a big effect on the wider world.
Do you think zoos have a part to play in conservation?
Well, there are some old-fashioned zoos where the animals are kept in small cages for the entertainment of the public. The animals aren't able to express their natural behaviour, and those zoos should definitely be shut down immediately.
Mm.
The best thing is for an animal to live in its natural environment. But we have this idealised view of freedom, where their lives will be wonderful. The reality is that in so many places, there are hunters.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we have to step in and offer a species protection, and that's where the new type of zoos come in.
Mm. In your new book, entitled Animals and Their Habitats, what message are you hoping to convey?
The natural world is in real crisis, but there are extraordinary people all around the planet who are absolutely determined that endangered animal species or plants or ecosystems should be helped to restore themselves. I hope it'll be inspiring for young biologists and botanists at the outset of their careers to read about these people who have taken on these huge challenges.
Have children, do you think, lost that sense of connection to the natural world?
Yes. We should be encouraging them to get back in touch with nature, either by taking them into a natural environment or by bringing nature to the child.
Mm.
You know, research has shown that contact with the natural world is actually crucial for psychological growth.
Wow.
So many children have such little opportunity to experience nature and only do so second-hand from a TV screen.
Mm. What does your organisation called In Touch aim to do?
Well, it's all youth-driven. So it's young people discussing the problems they see around them and then between them choosing three projects to work on that they feel would make things better.
Oh.
One project is about people, one is about animals, and one is about the environment. So in any group of young people, you get those passionate about animals, you get some who want to do community service for people, and you have some who want to help the local environment.
Do you think you still have a role to play?
Judging from the number of girls who write and say they want to follow in my footsteps, I think I do. But what I'd really like to do is stop people blaming science for everything. Many people think that it's scientists who are damaging the environment. I want people to see that they themselves are responsible too, and that they can also be part of the solution by being conscious about the choices they make in their everyday lives. That's what I want to achieve.
Mm. Many thanks, Patricia.
That's the end of part four. There will now be a pause of 5 minutes for you to copy your answers onto the separate answer sheet. Be sure to follow the numbering of all the questions. I shall remind you when there is 1 minute left so that you're sure to finish in time. That is the end of the test. Please stop now. Your supervisor will now collect all the question papers and answer sheets.